Welcome to the New Books in Music podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Lee Nash. Rebecca Tahuz-Dubrow is currently the writer-in-residence with the University of California. Her book, Personal Stereo, which is part of the Object Lessons series published by Bloomsbury, is a study of the evolution and impact of the personal stereo. The book is also a reflection on what it means to listen to music within a private bubble and looks at the nostalgic value of the device. It's my pleasure to welcome Rebecca to today's podcast. Hi, Rebecca. How are you doing today?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing well, thanks.
Before we talk about personal stereo, if you could tell us a little bit something about yourself and your educational background and your current career.
Sure. Well, I studied literature as an undergrad at Yale University, and that's it. I don't have any advanced degrees. I have been a freelance writer for quite a while, basically since I finished college way back in 2001, and have written a range of kinds of stories, kind of a balance between more reported pieces and essays and book reviews. And this is my first book in which I attempted to kind of integrate all of those different kinds of work I just mentioned, doing some reporting and research and also more essayistic writing and analysis.
Could you tell us a little bit about your current position as writer of residence at the University of California?
Sure. So it's at the University of California at Irvine specifically, and it basically just means that I have an office on campus and I have library privileges and access to online resources, and I participate in events on campus. I've done a couple events related to this project and other events as well. So it's not exactly a job. It's not like a full-time job. It's just kind of an affiliation.
I know you're not the editor in such of this Object Lesson series, but I've been really curious about this series for a really long time. But your book was actually the first that I'd read from this series, which has got like 50 books in, I'm pretty sure. It's pretty huge. But, you know, I think the reason was, you know, that the Walkman or the personal stereo was like something very personal to me. Like, I had one when I was a kid and I loved it so much. But could you tell us just a little bit about this Object Lessons series that Bloomsbury publishes and how your book fits into that?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number. You may be right that it's roughly 50 by now. It's been around for several years, and there are a whole variety of objects, of course. Remote control is one that I read. The title of each book is the name of an object that the book focuses on. And what are some others? There's phone booth. There's golf ball, there's tree, so you can get a sense of the range. There's also some subjects that aren't technically objects, that are more like phenomena, but they grant a little leeway to include them in the series too. There's my friend Evan Kinsley, wrote a book called Questionnaire. That's a great book, and that's actually how I found out about the series, was from him. What else? There's silence. Jet lag is one that was released in the same batch as mine. So really it's just not necessarily a physical object, although many of them are, but kind of just each one is an opportunity to look at a given phenomenon in depth and in kind of idiosyncratic ways, and just it's an opportunity for a meditation on whatever the phenomenon of choice is.
So you obviously wrote one about the personal stereo.
Yes.
Yeah. So what were your own first memories and experiences of a personal stereo?
Well, my book is about the Walkman, and we debated whether to title it Walkman or Personal Stereo. One reason we went with, there were some legal concerns about using the title Walkman because that's a Sony trademark. So we went with Personal Stereo, even though most people know it just as the Walkman. And that's what I typically call it as well. But so I, like you, just had really fond memories and an emotional attachment to my Walkman when I was younger. And I just remember listening to it when taking walks, riding buses, and it was just this euphoric experience, and or this comforting experience, depending on, you know, the context and the music and how I was feeling at the time. But I just really loved my Walkman, and it was this great companion to have when I was younger. So thinking about that, it was just, that was kind of the initial attraction to writing about it, with those fond memories.
Yeah, well, that's actually pretty interesting, because, you know, in your book, you take us through the evolution of the Sony Walkman and the various kind of prototypes that Sony put out there before it officially launched in 1979. But I was interested in this other actor in the personal stereo story that doesn't actually get like a lot of credit. So could you tell us about this guy, Andreas Pavel?
Yeah. So Andreas Pavel was German. He was born in 1945 in outside Berlin, and his family moved when he was a boy to Brazil, to Sao Paulo, and because for his father's work there, he was a businessman, and Pavel was a music lover and was also very familiar with audio equipment, and he would listen to this hi-fi music with friends in his mother's house in Sao Paulo. Like, he would have parties all the time, and they became just enthralled by this hi-fi sounds that they were able to get in that room where they had these parties. So in 1972, Andreas Pavel and his girlfriend at the time were going traveling in Europe, and Andreas decided he needed to find a way to reproduce that experience in a mobile, portable way, because he had just grown to love that music so much. So he kind of experimented with combining some devices that were available on the market. He actually used a Sony tape recorder that now to us would just seem just so clunky and bulky. It weighed 5 pounds, but that was kind of the miniature tape recorder at the time. And he found these really high quality headphones produced by a company. The brand was Pioneer, and he kind of jerry-rigged it so that he had to use this special cord to connect the headphones to what were intended to be loudspeaker jacks. Anyway, so it worked quite well, and even though it was a little clunky, it was just amazing. He and his girlfriend, he actually connected 2 headphones to the device, so they were able to listen together. They were in Switzerland in the mountains, and it was snowing, and it was this just magical, indelible experience. They were listening to a cover of What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. That was the first song they heard. And so he wasn't intending to sell it himself or patent it or anything like that. He just wanted the experience. But over the next few years, he did begin to think that maybe he should patent it, because it was, surprisingly to us now, it was like really, no one had, the idea of walking around wearing headphones was really a new idea, and it was a very strange idea at the time. And so he decided to try to patent it, and basically he patented it and ended up having, but it couldn't get any companies interested in marketing it. And then when Sony ended up marketing the Walkman a couple of years later, they ended up having a protracted legal battle. And ultimately Pavel lost in court, but was able to get a settlement from Sony, in, I believe, 2005. So it dragged on for decades, but he eventually got some vindication that he was the inventor.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's such a great story, because again, like, you know, yeah. we know the Sony Walkman story, yet like I didn't know about this guy until I read your book. And to me, you know, like his story and his interpretation of what a personal stereo was just like, it's so much more magical, so mm-hmm. much more like transcendental, and it's the freedom of, you know, kind of it's that's more in tune with the way that I experience yeah. my Sony Walkman or my variation. I think I did have a Sony Walkman, but I think I also had like some other makes as well, like over the years and stuff. So so it's almost like there's two sides to that story.
Yeah, he was very, very passionate about it and very proud of it. He's still alive and I was able to yes. talk to him. So that was...
Yeah. So, you know, whilst I was reading your book, I kept slipping into my own kind of Walkman memories. And one of which was sitting in the back seat of my parents' car while we were driving on holiday and bellowing out Pearl Jam's Once. Just continuously, like I was really bugging my parents with this. So I really can't hear that song or even that whole album, in fact, Pearl Jam's 10, without being instantly transported back to that back seat of sitting in my parents' car. Uh-huh. So are there any songs that instantly remind you of your Walkman and that you can't hear without being sort of transported back?
So what I really loved the best, there were certainly albums that I listened to a lot on the Walkman. And I think I refer in the book to Blood Sugar Sex Magic by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, you do? Yes. Yeah.
I listened to that a lot when I was walking. And so I do, if I ever hear like Under the Bridge, I remember that. And there, you know, I would, of course, make mixtapes. And there are songs that you know, I was really into, you know, alternative music, but I also loved Madonna. Not all Madonna. I would never listen to a Madonna album, but I loved pop songs too. So there were some pop songs that I would put on my mixtapes. And so Like a Prayer was certainly on one of my mixtapes. Beat It by Michael Jackson. So some of these songs would probably bring me back.
Yeah,
experience.
And you know, again, this book kind of made me think of another film, actually, which was High Fidelity.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So there is in that the main character kind of gives you this actually like talks to the camera about how making a mixtape is like this perfect art form.
Yeah.
And so I used to spend an awful lot of time perfecting that as well. Like, you know, the tape has to start with this really like mm-hmm. kick-ass song that, and then build and then come down a little bit and then build again. So yeah, that kind of took me back to making those. And actually something that I really miss now, because I have a Spotify account which randomly plays me songs, and you know, sometimes mm-hmm. it just doesn't match the way that the tape kind of your own tape, even if you make your own playlist, it just doesn't work the same way. I don't know if you find that too.
Yeah. And when you would listen to those mixtapes over and over again, you would just memorize the order and you would just, you know, at the end of one song, you would just start to hear the next one even before it started. And I think that's an experience people don't have nearly as much nowadays. They don't even have that with albums because people don't listen to albums as much. So, I think that is a loss.
I think so. And I think also as well, again, like with Spotify or with even like digital music, you have this perfect, everything on it is just perfect. You know, everything mm-hmm. sounds great. When you listen to a cassette tape, you know, over the years, because you know, these things lasted a long time, the little warps, the little twists in the tape almost became part of the experience. And again, with Spotify, like everything just sounds so crystal clear that there's no real kind of like, it doesn't trap memory like I think you did when I was a kid, you know, with like, you know, little twists in the tape and stuff like that, that kind of made the song, you know, just speed up or slow down or something for a moment. It became sort of part of the kind of listening experience.
The kind of the physicality of the object of the tape.
Yeah. Which I miss in all senses, actually, in all this kind of digital world. I mean, I'm sort of in my late 30s, so I grew up with a lot of this stuff, but I'm adapting. It's okay. So in the book, you talk about the Walkman being a departure from sensory norms. This idea that the Walkman acts like an intoxicating high and I quote your book here, offered such an individualized and immersive experience for the listener. I really like this concept. In fact, actually, we were kind of just talking about that. And would you mind just to kind of explaining that point in your book just a little bit more?
So I think in that part of the book, I was trying to convey what a novel experience it was at the time in the late 70s, because now it's just part of life. And it can be hard to recapture how new it was and how strange it was. But people, the experience of moving through the world and having this soundtrack, and, you know, music that basically felt like it was almost originating in your own head, and moving through the world and seeing images. People compared it to being in a film or watching a film. They also often compared it to drugs, various kinds of intoxication. So that it wasn't that you couldn't bring entertainment with you at all before the Walkman. You could read a magazine. You could, you know, the boom boxes were popular at that time in the mid 70s, but it was not as you read that quote, it was not as individualized if you were carrying a boombox. It was it was kind of imposing your music on everyone around you as well. And it wasn't as immersive. You weren't as immersed in the sounds and in a way that kind of divided you from the rest of your environment. So although this is now a very common experience, at the time it was very new.
And so that's kind of like the internal experience that people were having. But let's talk about kind of what the external sight of that was. So you talk about the sight of someone with headphones on their head, walking around listening to their music. And that's something that was quite odd at the time. And the perception of these people from an external point of view was that they were disconnected from their surroundings. And as you mentioned in the book, they were having a superior experience listening to the latest records. Why do you think people were so concerned about what was happening on those headphones? Why do you think people were so concerned about people drifting out of the world for a few moments?
Again, it was new, so it was quite disorienting to see people just be able to kind of opt out of public space in that way. And part of it was, as you mentioned, it seems like they were having a superior experience because they were just really getting off on their music, and the people around them who weren't listening to music were just kind of stuck with their everyday commute or wherever they were. And so that kind of sent a message that people sometimes didn't receive very well. And even in just other ways that can be mundane ways, like, you know, if somebody needed directions, you were wearing a Walkman, you just didn't seem available to provide them. It just seemed antisocial. If someone was hurt, and you were just zoned out, closing your eyes, listening to music, you wouldn't even be aware of it. So it kind of, in these different ways, some of which were more subtle than others, it kind of eroded the quality of public space, or at least that's how some people felt.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever been guilty of this, but I've definitely walked around, you know, through neighborhoods that I'm not too happy about walking around, or through busy malls or whatever, with just a set of headphones on, but actually not listening to anything, just because I want to be
left alone.
Yeah, and that the perception there is that I'm obviously got something going on my headphones. So, you know, I don't get approached by the charity worker who is trying to get me to sign up to give them a monthly donation or whatever. And, you know, that kind of feels bad, but it's kind of hard to admit that. But, you know, it's definitely something that I have to do sometimes when I'm just not in the mood.
Yeah. So there was definitely that aspect. I mean, sometimes people just wanted to listen to music and it was the, being cut off from their surroundings was kind of just a side effect. Other times people did intentionally want to escape their surroundings and didn't want to interact with other people around them, and whether it was in their cars with their families, as you mentioned before, or wanting to avoid people asking them for things on the street. Or one interesting aspect that came up was, it turned out that some women who wanted to avoid being catcalled or harassed on the streets would put on their headphones and found that that helped.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we look at the Walkman now and we kind of do look at it almost in a nostalgic way anyway, but I feel like we're way more cut off now than we were back then. And, you know, people have serious problems with that. But now, you know, we walk around with our iPhones, we're listening to music, we're checking our email, we're looking at the news, we might be watching a video. Yeah. I don't know, you know, I feel like we're so much more cut off than we were back then. But yet no one seems to have a problem with it now. So obviously we've adapted somehow as a society. Perhaps.
Maybe. I do think I have a problem with it. So, and I think, I mean, I think clearly it's much more extreme than it was. But I do think it's troubling. I think in both cases, there are obviously pluses and minuses, and I loved listening to my Walkman, but I can also understand the concerns now. And of course, I see why there are benefits to being able to entertain ourselves or be productive in while we're taking the train to work or whatever. But I think there are concerns about how all of our technology use has affected public space, and it continues to affect it in kind of more extreme ways.
So let's talk a little bit about like how the music industry responded to the popularity of the Walkman, because as with the Walkman, like with everything else that the music industry has to deal with, they're like so far behind actually kind of jumping on this. Like, you know, digital music, they weren't ready for that. You know, Napster, they weren't ready for that. And they weren't ready for the Walkman either.
I think it's more that they weren't ready for cassettes. And of course, the Walkman was related to that, because the Walkman accelerated the shift from vinyl to cassettes. So yeah, there was this, and their concern was that with blank tapes, people were able to dub albums, make mixtapes, and basically the consumers all of a sudden had a lot more control and didn't necessarily always have to buy the albums they wanted directly from the music corporations. So that caused a lot of hand-wringing in the music industry, and there were these campaigns. And in fact, the more famous one was in the UK. Home taping is killing music was, there were these, I guess, advertisements, and also that phrase was included in albums, in the sleeves of all these records that were released during that period. So yeah, they were just, even though it seems very quaint now, they were really freaked out about what they called home taping.
So towards the end of the book, you seem to, I think you've kind of just covered this a little bit, just the previous question actually, but let's go into it again. Towards the end of the book, you seem to find issue with our freedom to listen to any song. So again, we've spoken about Spotify. Now we have kind of unlimited capabilities in terms of what we listen to. And you seem to like the idea of control and restriction. And I think that's a great idea too, in some respects, because I don't know about you, but I can barely get through a song on Spotify without trying to click to the next one. You know, when we had cassette tapes, we really had to listen to the end. You could try and skip forward, but you might miss the beginning of the song. So why do you think this kind of idea of control and restriction is preferable?
I think there are a couple different reasons. I think part of it is related to what you just said, that it's like dating, right? It's when you know that there are so many options out there, it can be hard to focus on what's right in front of you or what you're listening to at the time. And sometimes that kind of restriction or commitment can force you to focus and to just derive a lot more gratification than you otherwise would if you were just looking around for what's the next thing, the next person or the next song or whatever it may be.
I thought like it was a really interesting point that you made in the book. And, you know, it's been something that I've been thinking about as well, because, you know, a friend of mine forwarded me a link to a Spotify playlist that he put together. And, you know, I didn't even bother to look at the track listing or anything like that. I just put it straight on. And, you know, when a friend used to hand me a cassette tape, it was kind of like, all right, what do we, okay, let's look at the inlay card. Oh, you know, great design and great tracks. And mm-hmm. yeah, this, you know, my friend there had obviously put in some time with this playlist, and I didn't really give it the time that I would have probably done if he'd given me like a physical format.
Yeah. I mean, I think the word I was looking for is scarcity. So like I have a 5-year-old daughter, and she, I just think children today, or children in any kind of affluent society, it's hard for them, or adults in any affluent society, it's hard. They don't, we read Little House on the Prairie, and those those girls had, you know, they had one dress, or they had for Christmas, they would get one present, and they would be so ecstatic. And so that just shows you how scarcity has its benefits, and that it's really hard to treasure something in the same way when you're living in circumstances of abundance. So I think having, you know, 5 tapes, of course, I don't want to romanticize it too much and be a Luddite, but obviously there are benefits to abundance as well. But I think sometimes we overlook the benefits of scarcity.
Yeah, I think so too. And I see your point. I have a 6-year-old son grown up with Netflix, YouTube, mm-hmm. And so like any TV show is at his disposal, basically. Whereas, you know, when me growing up as a kid, it was TV, kids TV in the morning for maybe 2 hours, and that was kind of your lot. So yeah. It's good. So now I have to admit that I probably gave up on my Walkman long after I should have given up on it. I kept it quite some time, but anytime I tried a new device, such as like the CD Walkman, or one of the very early MP3 players that came onto the market, which stored about 15 songs. It wasn't much at all. I was always disappointed. You know, I used to have this very long walk to work every morning. And when I got my CD Walkman, I put it in my back pocket or in my bag, and it would just skip around all over the place. Like if you walked off a curb or something,
yeah,
like, it's awful. So when did you finally give up and move on? And, what device and apps do you use now to listen to music?
So I never had a Discman, which is another word for the CD players. I agree, from trying them out or even just seeing them, they're just not good products. They're big and cumbersome and heavy, and I understand they skipped a lot. So I never had one of those, and I never had an early MP3 player, and I continued to listen to my Walkman into, I believe, 2006, when my now husband gave me an iPod. It was an iPod Nano, I think. And I did really love the iPod, I have to say. So I listened to that for quite a few years, although I unfortunately lost it a few years ago. I would still listen to it now if I had it. But we have, you know, Apple Music. We also have records. We have a record player, and I do like to listen to records. And I have a Walkman now. I lost my own original Walkman somewhere along the way, but during the course of writing this book, a friend of mine gave me a Walkman, and I do listen to it, and I really enjoy listening to it. When I go for walks at night, sometimes I'll bring it along.
So is that the same Walkman that finishes your book? Because there is like an epilogue at the end there that you talk about a friend giving you a personal stereo.
Yeah.
Is that the same one?
It's actually not. That was one that a friend lent to me because I wanted to just try one out after all these years and see what it was like. And so a friend who lives near me lent me that, but then another friend who just knew that I was writing this book happened to come upon one and that he didn't need. So he sent it to me, and that's the one that I listen to now.
So actually my next question was, and you know, I've told you kind of what I miss about the Walkman and how Spotify doesn't quite make it the same, but you've actually got a Walkman. So I don't know, this question may be redundant, but what do you miss about the Walkman? Or I suppose, I guess, because you've got one, but the culture around it, I guess, what do you miss about the culture of the Walkman?
Well, I think, or what do I like or appreciate about the Walkman now? I think the main thing is that I guess my alternative when I go for walks would be to listen to my iPhone, to listen to music on my iPhone. But that feels like a really different experience to me because it's connected to all these other functions. And what I love about the Walkman is that you can just kind of escape for a few moments. And with the smartphone, if you were listening to music through that, you would also be subject to receiving a call or a text or a news alert, or you would be tempted to check your email or check Facebook or the million other things that people do on their phones. So it's not really the same kind of refuge. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I miss and what I appreciate about the Walkman.
So you feel like it's a more immersive experience now that you have this Walkman. Yeah, yeah, I totally get that. This is your first book, am I right?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. And so what have you got anything planned for the your next book or your next writing projects?
I'm between projects. I'm working on a few ideas maybe that could become potentially articles that might grow into books. I don't really know yet. I definitely want to write another book and I haven't decided on a topic, but I could certainly continue to think about these issues of technology. So that could definitely sustain my interest. And as I was saying before, I really have a lot of problems with the way people use technology now. At the same time, writing this book forced me to realize that, of course, people had a lot of problems with the Walkman at the time, and that was something I loved. So it gave me really good perspective on how I shouldn't just judge technology because it's new and be averse to it because it's different, and that I should try to be rational about it and not just have these emotional reactions. But even so, I think there are some real concerns about the way people and especially children are exposed to technology these days. So that's one avenue that I might pursue.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Rebecca, I really want to thank you for coming on this podcast. Your book, I opened up so much for me in sense of like being more aware of how I was consuming my music, and it made me feel like nostalgia for when I was a kid, and actually got me listening to some Pearl Jam again. So thanks for that. And also, you know, this Object Lesson series as well. This was the first book that I read of that series, and now I am really interested in kind of reading a lot more. So it's really good. I really want to thank you for coming on. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure talking to you.